Today is Veterans Day, so our podcast guest is a former Marine Corps corporal and one of the co-founders of Sucuri. Tony Perez and his partners took a small web-based security company from $0 to $12 million in 6 years. They were recently acquired by GoDaddy, and Tony is now the head of the security business organization. In today's episode, I talk with Tony about his experiences in the Marines and how that shaped who he's become as an entrepreneur. Part of my philosophy of interviews is that people should use whatever language they wish to use to talk about their own lives. So just a heads up to some listeners that there's some choice military language in this particular episode. So if you are listening with small kids or listening in the car, you might want to save this one for a time when grown-up language is more appropriate. For those of you like Tony, who have done two very difficult jobs in your life, being both members of the military and entrepreneurs, kudos to you. Neither of those activities are easy, and the fact that you have had the energy, passion, and stick-to-itiveness to do both is commendable. So we salute you on this Veterans Day. A big thanks from Zen Founder.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this woman, non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Zen founder. Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode.
So I am here today talking with Tony Perez, who is the co-founder, right? Are you co-founder or are you founder?
No, I'm a co-founder. I'm not that lucky to be a founder.
Or you are lucky to be a co-founder.
I am.
Because your co-founder is pretty cool.
That's right.
Anyway, co-founder of Sucuri, which is a business that specializes in internet security. And Tony is a former Marine, and he is now the head of security business org at GoDaddy. After exiting earlier this year, in 6 years, he and his team grew Sucuri from zero to $12.5 million. So they're pretty awesome. He's pretty successful. And he is here talking to me today about his experiences in business, but also his experiences in the Marine Corps. So thanks for being with me, Tony.
For sure. I'm really excited to be here, Doc. And just, you know, I'm going to call you Doc because that's what we do in the military. We call our docs, and that's a term of endearment. So please don't take it any other way than that.
What's up, Doc? It's cool.
I was going to intro like as what's up, Doc, but you didn't give me the opportunity. So now I have to kind of add context.
Yeah, that makes the joke less.
I know. So much context. Every single time I have to add context, freaking sucks. So what's up, Doc?
Oh, well, I want to know what's up with you. You've had this amazing success in the last 6 years and now this exit, and now you are rocking and rolling in the corporate world. But I would actually really like to talk with you about your experiences in the military and how they shaped the entrepreneur that you've become. So first things first, what led you to enlist in the Marine Corps?
So as for how I got into the Marine Corps, I'm a first generation immigrant here. So my dad came over from Cuba in the flotilla, and then my mom came over from Colombia. And so we didn't have a lot. And I was raised down in South Florida, in Miami, and I was raised in Little Havana. And so for me, my aspirations weren't very high, right? I was never kind of around this ecosystem of people like with high aspiration. We were just kind of grinding it out, living life. And so when I was around 16, 17 years old, I just didn't have a lot going for me. You know, I was getting involved in gangs and doing bad things and, you know, just things that weren't necessarily my proudest moments in life. And one of my uncles, who is kind of getting married into the family, I got out as a Marine, and kind of came up to me one day and was like, you know, man, through life, you have this point in life where you have to make a decision, right? You have this fork in the road. You either go left, you go right. You're heading down this path, right? Where you're going to get involved. You're going to get deeper with gangs. You're going to get deeper with drugs. You can get deep, you know, you end up in jail, stuff like that. I will go into your closet right now I would grab all the clothes you had. Thankfully, I didn't have a lot. It was a very small closet, right? He says, but I'll throw everything away and I'll go buy you new outfits for everything. And he offered that to both my brother and I. My brother was too proud and was like, no, I'm not going to do that. Fuck that. And then I said, wow, that's kind of really interesting. I had never really had that in my life. And so I said, sure, fuck it. Let's do it, right? Let's get some new gear and let's see what's up. And so it turned out that he was a Marine and he started talking to me about his time in the Marine Corps and how it changed his life. And he was a special operator. And it was one of those, this is for me, right? Like this is going to be what my life's about.
Was there something in particular that made you think this is me?
No, just the structure, the order. I think it was the purpose, right? All of a sudden I felt like there was a purpose, right, for my country. And it just felt like something I couldn't get my hands around. And it was just something that was so much bigger than me that I was just kind of infatuated with the idea. And so he kind of talked to me and kind of got me engaged with it. Next thing you know, I'm in the recruiter's office and I was trying to drop out of school to go in the Marine Corps, right? I was like, this is what I want to do. And I was what you would call a motivator. I was like hard charging, ready to go. I'm a very intense guy. And it started at a very young age.
No one who knows you would ever think that.
And so I was, I don't know. I was so ready for a change, right? There was a lot of shit happening in my life, you know, growing up and, you know, just always scraping for stuff. And I just wanted to get out of it bad, right? I just wanted to just kind of see something different. And so I just kind of went all in. I said, this is all I got, right? This is what I'm going to do. And so I went and I talked to the recruiters and I originally signed up to be a grunt. So a grunt is what you would call, you know, we call them bullet catchers, right? These are the guys that they're carrying rifles and they're just shooting. And I was like, you know what? That's fine. I had a very, I don't want to say low self-esteem, but it was just kind of like, this is what I'm good for. I can catch bullets, right?
You didn't fight for anything higher for yourself.
Yeah, right. I mean, that was just, I'm cool with that, right? If I die, my mom gets some money, I'm set, right? And so I did that, but then they wouldn't let me drop out of school. They said that I needed to finish my senior year, and so I did. But then during my senior year, we were playing football, and naturally in my approach to life, I ended up tearing my meniscus. That ended up delaying my entry. And so at the time when I was going in, you were able to sign up for their special ops group, 0321. But because of my knee injury, I had to drop backwards. And so my secondary choice had been intelligence. Thankfully, I don't know how, I ended up getting decent scores in my ASVAB, which is the test. It's kind of like the SATs to go in. And I guess I did all right. And so when I went to boot camp, they had us in a line and they're like, Perez. And I'm like, that's me. And they're like, you go that way. Everybody else go this way. And I was the one out of my whole team that got pulled aside. And they're like, okay, you're going to go down the intel side. So you walk down this door and there's another group of people in intel. And they're like, okay, you know, who had the highest math? And at the time, you know, I had done some calculus and some advanced math. And like, okay, where are you going to go be what they would call an OT-61, which is a geospatial intel guy. I said, fuck it, whatever. That's fine. And so I did that. What was interesting is that even when I went in the Marine Corps, there was a lot of struggles that I had to go through in boot camp, right? One of the things that they told me early on was like, the quickest way through boot camp is to go through boot camp, right? Anything you
like to just do it.
Just do it, right? And I took that to heart. And the reason that was so important was because there's a lot of guys that try to get out of boot camp by injuring themselves or doing silly things. And what ends up happening is they'll end up 2-3 years in boot camp, right?
Oh, geez.
Yeah, and it's horrible. And you go into like the medical platoon and you're doing all this stupid stuff and you're picking up it's just horrible. And so I just could not allow that to happen. I just couldn't fail. And so why that's important to know is because at the time I was still recovering from my knee. Well, me and one of my DIs, we just kind of butted heads a little bit, right? And so he found out that I had a knee injury. And then he would make me do like squats and he would make me do duck walks up and down. He'd ruck me up with my pack and I'd have to go up and down the halls. He'd have me running. He'd have me in the pit, right? Just anything to do to get me to drop out. And then my knee would swell up every night. And so every night I'd be laying there with my knee swollen, lifted. And then, you know, 3 a.m, he'd come hollering at me, getting me out of the rack, tossing my stuff, just getting me to work more. And then it so happened that in boot camp, you got to go through, do all your medical. And they ended up wanting to pull my wisdom teeth. And you don't have much of a choice in boot camp. And so they pulled my wisdom teeth. The problem is they have a lot of student doctors coming through the place. And so they're clamping on my wisdom and they're yanking on it, right? Like they've got a lady holding my head down, the other person with the pliers, and they're just pulling on the crap, right? And I'm like, what the fuck is going on right now? So they pull it out. Well, lo and behold, it gets infected. And the whole back of my mouth spreads open and I get these huge, like if you had video, you would be able to see these big, like ballooned. It looked like I had mumps or whatever it's called right in my jaw. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it was really, really yeah, it was horrible. And so again, my DI is like, you're going to drop out. And I just refused. I could not talk. Right. But then they would want me to like scream the responses back. It was just, oh my God. But I just refused. All I could remember was what they told me going in is like the quickest way out is just to go through it. And so there I am with my bum knee and my busted mouth, and they're giving me like 800 milligrams of Motrin whenever they get around to giving it to me, right? Because you can't have the meds yourself. You have to go to your DI, you have to knock on the door, and I'd be like, you know, like my knees be like, you know, my mouth is hurting.
Please give me drugs. So you had to fight really hard just to like get in and stay in from the very beginning.
Why is my life so difficult, right? Like, what happened here? And then...
So it sounds like you made it through boot camp eventually.
I did. Yeah, I made it. Well, I did my 3 months like everybody else, right? So I did my 3 months, and then I got sent to my school up by DC. So what was really interesting about this is that, so I get to school and I missed a class. Like, I don't know who the fuck was planning this shit, but I missed a goddamn class. So I had to sit there for an entire class before I started my class, right? And so I'm like, you gotta be shitting me. So for another 9 months, I'm sitting up there, you know, cleaning decks, buffing floors, just all this bullshit, right? And then 9/11 happens. So my class starts and I'm up there in Belvoir and everybody's freaking out, right? Belvoir is just a few miles south of the Pentagon. And so we're like, what's going on, right? Everybody's in arms. We're working huge details, working the fences, working the gates. Just, it's just everybody, it's all hands on deck.
I didn't realize that you were enlisted during 9/11. I mean, that's...
Yeah, yeah. And so what's interesting about this is then, so I do my school, it's another 9 months, and then I get shipped to the fleet. Right, that's what it's called when you kind of leave your school and you hit the fleet. And I get attached to 1st Marine Expeditionary Force out in Camp Pendleton. Well, that's it, right? Everybody's going to shit. OEF is kicking off with Afghanistan. We're prepping a lot of support back stateside to the guys going in country in Afghanistan. Things about to pop off. This is 2001. 2002, things are about to pop off in Iraq. I weasel my way into getting into what's called the 1st Marine Expeditionary Brigade, or the MEB, and then that gets shipped out to Kuwait in advance of a potential attack into Iraq, right? Right? And everybody's still saying, no, we're not going to war, all stuff. And there I am in Kuwait, right, with my saw gun, driving behind Jeeps, you know what I mean? Escorting. Yeah. You know, it's funny because I go through all this school for my training and I did so little of it early on.
you didn't do a lot of like geospatial
engineering. No, it was like I was a saw gunner. I was on the back of Jeeps going back and forth between the ports and the commando base. We get to the commando camp in Kuwait, just south of the border, and we're just setting shit up. We're getting all the gear in spot, and it's just long days, right? So I get attached to the MEB. The rest of the MEB eventually falls as the first MARDIV comes, and then, you know, around early 2013. So I get out there, right, October, early November 2002, around early February, March timeframe, you start having the rest of the unit come out. And then I get attached to the MEB again. And this is the MEB that was going to actually deploy into Iraq. So I get attached to a 5-man team and we gather up all our intel. And they send us out, you know, just about maybe 2-3 days before the actual war kicked off, March 19th. And so I'm attached to this 5-man team. And this 5-man team has, what we've done is we've essentially taken all the intelligence we have, we've consolidated it, we've put it into these Humvees, into these armored Humvees, and we've taken it out to a grid point out in the desert, completely far away from the commando camp. It's just the five of us, right? Just south. It's kind of our assembly point, just south of the border or the berms. So we're sitting there. Nobody's communicating with us. It's complete blackout. And then the Scud gets sent across from Iraq into Kuwait and lands just, 50-100 yards away from commando camp, which is the camp I was at, right? And then all shit breaks loose, right? Next thing you know, fucking the mic's hot. Everybody's coming out. We're all getting ready to go. Let's go. We're going to do this, right? And it's just like, what the fuck? Next thing you know, I'm all geared up in my MOP 4 level 4, right? So that means you have all your plastic gear on, your gloves, the whole nine yards. It's already, 100, 105 out there.
In the event of like a chemical exposure?
Well, that was the big concern. Yeah. This was a big concern back in 2003, right? It was, oh my God, you know, Iraq has those WMD. We're all going to fucking die, right? You know, Staff Sergeant comes around. Hey, write your letters home. Tell your moms you love them. Put them in a plastic bag. Put them in your pocket, right? That's it. We're going. I said, all right, fuck it. Let's do it. And so you're like, this is what it's all about, baby, right? And see, I'm in full mob gear, ready to go. Only thing I don't have on is my gas mask. And so we get the call, March 19th. We're in our Humvees. And then boom, the convoy's pushing north, right? And so we're pushing across the berm. I rode the whole push up during the first 45 days of the war from the Kuwaiti border. And we pushed all the way through the oil fields, all the way up to Baghdad.
Wow. That's an amazing experience to be like there before it gets started and then to be on the team that's the first through. I mean, you were an intense guy before you joined the Marine Corps, and I can only imagine that the level and intensity of the things that you've experienced and done has, I don't know, do you think it's increased your intensity? Has it mellowed you out a little bit? Like, how did your experiences shape who you are now?
You know, it's interesting, right? I remember when I first got back, I looked at the world very differently. There's something you go through kind of when you kind of come to terms with the fact that, okay, yeah, I'm supposed to be dead here in a couple hours. So that's cool, right? Everything just seems simpler, right? But in many ways, kind of, and this is kind of what a lot of guys go through, is that you come home and you just can't relate anymore, right? Like the things that should be important don't feel as important. It's just a fundamentally different way of looking at the world. I think in many ways, that's probably what's changed, is things that a lot of people will freak out about, I won't. I'll just kind of,
yeah,
okay, whatever, that's cool, let's do it, right? Nothing seems that hard when you compare it to what's really happening in the world, right? It's kind of like, yeah, this is fine. Nobody's dying. Nobody's going to prison.
Well, nothing that you're going to experience at GoDaddy is going to be harder than what you experience in the Marine Corps.
Right, and that's exactly right. And it's funny because I've been out now. So I got out in 2005, and as with Veterans Day coming up, I was actually, you know, in the process of drafting a post where I'm kind of capturing all these moments. And, you know, even 12 years later, the experiences themselves are still very vivid in my mind, right? And the feelings are still very real, you know?
Yeah.
It was kind of interesting. I mean, but it puts things into a very interesting perspective. But what it does do, however, is it's built a certain level of kind of, I just kind of go out at everything really fucking hard, right? I'm always pushing the limits on stuff. You know, I have this kind of motto of like, no obstacle too great, right? Everything's about the experience. And I really believe that. I really live that, right? I mean, I see obstacles as nothing more than something for me to just completely destroy. and unfortunately, I kind of approach everything with that kind of mindset. Even business. Business is war for me, right? It's strategy, right? Like how I go after my competitors, how I have to go after customers, how I engage. It's a, you know, and how I manage and engage my teams. It's very like, we're doing this. It's not, it's all or nothing, right? We're leaving it all out there.
You're all in all the time.
That's exactly right. With almost everything that I do. And I don't know why that is. And I don't know if that's a carryover or not. It's just been part of my personality. So I promoted to sergeant. So going back to my story real quick. So I promoted to sergeant really fast in the Marine Corps. I was always kind of a go-getter. I was like, I wanted that next notch. And so I was attached to, so I picked up corporal when I got back. And then I got assigned to the Marine Expeditionary Unit, 11th MEU. And then in the 11th MEU, we were one of the few MEUs that got sent back to Iraq. I was like, fuck my life. I joined the Marine Corps to see the world. And all I'm seeing is this goddamn sandpit. And I got sent to Iraq, responsible for Karbala, Qadisiyah, and Anajaf provinces. And this is in 2014 to 2015. I was in country for about another 9 months. And this was when Fallujah and Najaf were going. I don't know if you remember back in 2014 with Fallujah and all that craziness.
Yeah.
But so then that was my next experience. So I ended up spending in country about a year and a half, a year and three quarters total. So that was kind of interesting. And then when I came back, that's when I was like, I was having real detachment issues from reality, right? So I was coming back and I just couldn't relate with civilian population. It was just tough. And so I found myself thinking, I was like, I think this is going to get worse. I don't know what the hell is going on in my head, but I need to get out. And I found this like this craving for like just an attachment with another person. And so I ended up meeting my wife when I got back. Well, actually, I met her online there. But that's a different story. But then I ended up saying, I need to get out. And that was just kind of based on the experience I had with that additional 9 months. I just needed a break. It just felt like a lot. And then this is nothing compared to some guys. Some guys have done 5, 6, 7, 8 different deployments, right? They're all in. And that's great. I just, for whatever reason, I just found myself in a very tough spot at that time.
2 was enough for you. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I got out and I became a defense contractor. But I got out. I was like 1 foot in, 1 foot out, right? So I became a defense contractor. And then I was working with the Marine Corps, Army, and Air Force, right? So I never really pulled myself away from that environment. I did that for another 7 years. And then in 2011, I did another deployment as a defense contractor, but this time to Afghanistan. And then it was around this time was when Dre, my brother-in-law, introduced me to Daniel, who's the actual founder of Sikuti. And both of them approached me and was like, hey, man, you kind of go at it at all you do. You seem like a pretty smart dude when it comes to managing projects and getting shit done. You want to come help us build this thing? And I was like, yeah, fuck it, man. Let's make a little cash on the side, see what's up. And this was my first foray into the world of entrepreneur. Like I never really set out to be an entrepreneur, right? I just, I've always considered myself an operator. I just get shit done. And so when they invited me to come on, I was like, well,
that's pretty much an entrepreneur.
So I was like, I don't know how hard this is, but we should be able to get this done, right? And so, and that's kind of fast forwarding to 2011 when I first kind of came on with the security team. And then from there, it just kind of, we just started figuring things out as they came up, right? We didn't have much of a business plan. We didn't really have much of a kind of go to market. It was just, we're going to do cool shit for our customers and figure it out, right?
Are all three of you veterans? Because Dre was in the Marines as well, right?
No, Dre was in the Navy.
Okay.
Dre was in the Navy. And then Daniel, he didn't go active military in Brazil. He's a Brazilian. Yeah, he was in the military academy. His dad's in the military. Like, his dad's a 4-star general down in the army right now in Brazil. And so he was like the black sheep of the family, didn't go in the military.
So in addition, or like besides the intensity.
So that's a lot of shit. I'm sorry.
No. I was just going to ask, like, besides the intensity with which you kind of tackle everything, are there other ways in which your experience in the Marines has shaped the kind of entrepreneur that you've become? I guess one of the things I'm thinking about is that, you know, you said you went in really because you were looking for a sense of purpose, like you're kind of adrift as a young man and needed something to focus you. I wonder if being an entrepreneur has had that similar focusing effect.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. So I gave a talk recently to a bunch of veterans at a veteran summit that I was invited to keynote. And one of the things I told them was that when I first got out, I had lost my purpose, right? You know, if you recall, I told you when I joined the Marine Corps, it gave me a purpose that I've never felt before, right? Like I was there for my brothers to my left and to my right. I knew what I was doing. This is my folk. This is my task. And it felt like a meaningful kind of task. Through my years as a defense contractor, I just never had that same purpose again. And so I struggled a lot those initial years. It was actually when they invited me on and I started focusing on this, this became my new purpose. And I told the entrepreneurs at that summit saying, you know, I believe that every one of us needs something like this when we get out of the military, right? We need something to channel our needs.
Like something to fight for, something to want, something to go after.
That's right. Because nothing seems to fill that void when you get out. Right? Nothing at the right scale, right? Like you can get out, you go get a job, but you just feel like you're just passing time. You're no longer
like not as alive as you were when you were deployed. I mean, I've talked to lots of folks about this and the experience of being deployed and having like all of your senses engaged. Like you're listening, you're watching, you're thinking, like everything is amplified. And then you come home and it can feel like you're sort of walking around like half awake, like the zombie version of yourself.
Yeah, I can relate with that. I mean, so yeah, I don't know. I think that the company gave me a purpose again. And in fact, when we exited back in April, even though I had migrated over to the new business with GoDaddy, I found myself all of a sudden in the same place I found myself back in 2005 with a huge void inside of me where it was like, what the hell just happened? What am I? Who am I? Right? Even though I had a job and I had, you know, my team was still there and I was still involved, et cetera, I had felt like I had lost something again. And I found myself looking to see if I can re-enlist again.
Really?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, recently. And then I was actually even thinking of just quitting GoDaddy and going to be a law enforcement. I actually applied to the FBI. I was like, I need a better, you know, I don't know what it was, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just mentally weak.
Or understimulated. Do you need a harder job at GoDaddy? Who's listening to this? Tony needs a harder job. He needs more work. He needs an outlet for his intensity.
So, yeah. Yeah. So that's how I got here.
I get the sense that like, because of some of the things we're talking about, that an entrepreneur's life is in some cases like a really good fit for people who are coming out of the military and going through that kind of reentry experience, because it does give you that single focus. It gives you something to fight for and be intense about. And the more intense you are, the more successful you are if you can channel your intensity well.
Oh, yeah. And you know what they teach us? They teach you in the military, right? You just don't give up. You keep going at it. You just dig deep, right? When we go on humps and you can't last, you just kind of put your head head down. You don't look at the target. You just keep marching. You keep pushing. You keep pushing, right? A lot of those things that we've learned are things that carry over really well, right? And it gave me an amazing work ethic when I got out, right? You know, you put me against anybody and it's just like, this guy doesn't fucking stop. And I was like, I just didn't know how to stop. Running a company was amazing for that, right? Because I could work as much as I wanted, as often as I wanted. And I just drive. And I loved it. I loved the thrill. I love the highs and the lows. I love, you know, one day we're up on sales, the other day we're down. We got a pissed off customer. Social's beating our ass, right? We got a hired person. Somebody's upset. It's like, what the fuck's going on? You're getting hit from all different angles. But I kind of like lift off that high.
And I gotta ask you just because of, you know, who I am. But like, I mean, what's the mental health story here? Like to live in that intensity for so much of your adult life. Like,
it's funny because, so we met over at Cabo Press recently, right? I had actually never been very open with mental health, even though some folks that we mutually know, like Corey and a few others, have spoken about it. I've always been very quiet about it. But I don't know what it was about the talk that you were giving, but I just seemed to kind of connect with it. And I was like, man, you know, if I'm being honest with myself, I've actually probably had a lot of mental health issues in my past. And so, and it's true, I was diagnosed with PTSD when I got out of the Marine Corps. And I was put on meds. And then, you know, I had my bout with, you know, alcohol and stuff like that. And I don't know. I don't know where you want to go with that, but like,
I mean, I guess I'm not prying as much as like, I appreciate you talking about it because it is a really, really common experience, obviously, for people who are specifically for people who are making that transition from military life to perhaps becoming entrepreneurs or are trying to figure out how, you know, like how they can make that shift. And I think your story is sort of powerful because you like, you know, you have three deployments, like you were in the middle of all of this shit and it did affect you, but yet you've still been able to be very successful.
It's interesting, right? Because I think that for a long time I was very ashamed. I never really talked about it. And even I've actually never really talked about it publicly either. I struggled with a lot of it, you know, just kind of getting myself back up, focusing myself. I really had to. Even today, I still struggle with anxiety issues. When my heart rate starts going, I get really, really anxious. You know, I had, you know, the cold sweats and the waking up at nights and stuff like that, right? I had this like big period where all I want to do is get in fights. I just couldn't understand. And I think that what I had to learn over time was just channeling that energy. And I didn't go to the VA. I mean, I did go to the VA. That's where they prescribed me with meds and I became very comatose and I just couldn't do that. And so I said, fuck the VA. And I got rid of my pills. And then I just tried to kind of figure myself out on my own. And I didn't believe in talking to therapists. I don't know. I'm fucking weird like that.
Except you're not weird. I think that's probably, unfortunately, how a lot of people feel or experience the VA. And I mean, you know this, other people might not know this, but I spent many years as a VA psychologist and training in the VA setting. And so I'm familiar with these conversations and how hard it is to like get connected to treatment that's helpful when you're in that situation.
It's just tough. And then I didn't really like talking about my experiences and the thing, you know, it was just weird.
I think it's like so many things in life. It's like both a superpower and a liability.
It is. Well, you know, it's funny. I just found out recently about, you know, we all talk about post-traumatic stress disorder, right? But nobody ever really talks about post-traumatic growth disorder.
Except it's not a disorder. It's just growth.
Well, whatever.
Sorry. Right?
Post-traumatic growth, I guess. Yeah. And so, And it's kind of interesting, though, because I think I've only heard a little bit about it, but I think that I went through this transformation period where, you know, I was able to channel that energy and just put all that I had going on towards growth, right? Even the days that I was just really, really struggling with stuff, I forced myself into this way of thinking and doing stuff, and eventually has gotten me to where I am today, right? But when I first got out, I struggled, right? Talking to people, I didn't have much of a filter, right? If you're a Marine, you get it, especially on the enlisted side. You say what's on your mind, you call people out on their bullshit, right? Because you don't have time for anything else other than that, right? Like, this is just what's up. You're just a fucking idiot or you're not. And that got me in a lot of trouble with HR and stuff like that at some of the companies I had to work at. And then slowly I've had to kind of do a lot of like self-awareness, self-actualization, and realize like, okay, I'm going to have to adjust certain types of my personality, still keep my authenticity, but, or keep who I am, but adjust and realize that I'm in a very different environment now. And so, I don't know, I feel like I've kind of migrated into this post-traumatic growth where I just continue to grow by just channeling all my energy on this. And I don't know if that's a thing or not, but that's what it feels like.
It's totally a thing, Tony. And I think you're a great example of it because you've been through some really hard things. And I think the experience of figuring out how to not let those things break you, but instead to fuel you is the conversation about growth. Some people like survive hard things, and then some people like turn it into fuel to thrive. And that's what post-traumatic growth is.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. I guess the way I always looked at it was, I didn't survive that time in my life not to do something with my life, right? I just keep thinking that I want to do more. I want to have bigger impact. And even here at GoDaddy, I'm trying to push us to have a bigger impact, have a more social good impact in the world, right? I don't know. It just kind of drives me right now.
Are you happy?
Wow, we're going deep with this. Happy in what way? What do you mean?
I don't know. Like, are you happy? So I guess the background of my question is like, when there's constant drive, is there ever like moments of satisfaction? Do you ever let yourself sit back and be like, okay, I'm proud of what I've done, and for this moment, it's enough. Like, I can just be content or happy.
No, I have yet to reach that point where I'm content with what I've done. Yeah, I don't know what it is. I have to keep pushing. I have to keep doing it. I think that's what hit me when we first did the acquisition, right? You know, all of a sudden I had a boss on top of me that was running the org, and they were working on an integration. I had done my job negotiating the deal, which took me about 6.5 months. And all of a sudden I was put to the side. I was put on the bench for a bit, and I just kind of sat there like, and I couldn't help kind of go through this mental exercise of like, what have I done? In terms of what have I done in life? I haven't achieved anything. Here I am. I just sold our company, right? But in the back of my head, I'm thinking, nothing, right? Like, nobody will ever understand that. You know, that was my highlight. What am I going to do now? I've got nothing to show for myself. Like, I was just kind of going through this whole process. Like, I got to figure this shit out. And then I kind of got myself in this phase, like, fuck that. I got to figure something out. I got to do something. I got to double down on something. I got to start over again. And then about 4 months in, things started to change in the organization. And then they made an adjustment saying, okay, Tony, you're now going to run the org. What we do is kind of a new reorg structure in the company. And all of a sudden I felt this new energy, like, fuck yeah, that's what I'm talking about, right? This is what I'm going to do.
You had a roll again.
Then I got the fire in me again. I'm like, fuck yeah, this is what we're going to do. And, you know, a week in, I'm like, this is the strategy. This is what I'm thinking. This is how we're going to change the fucking world when it comes to internet security. Like, and they're like, holy shit, what the hell is going on? But that's the only pace I know to go, right? I just needed a new mission.
Yeah.
So to your question, am I happy? Yeah. I mean, I think I'm happy, right? Am I ever satisfied? No, right? I'm always looking for the next big challenge. I'm always looking for that thing that's going to keep me grinding it out, right? I love being in that space. So, you know, for instance, I'm a grappler as well. So I train Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I shoot guns. I snowboard. I go off-roading now. And I'm just constantly looking for that next thing that I can do. Like, hey, can I prove myself? Can I do something bigger? Can I do something better? Right?
The next level of intensity.
Can I push the limit just a little bit further?
I keep getting back to this issue of like how you balance purpose and intensity. Because you go like balls to the wall for everything. I mean, there's just huge intensity inside of you. But is that ever tempered by a greater purpose?
I guess I don't see them as split, right? So the things that I do on the side, like jiu-jitsu and wheeling and shooting and stuff like that, those are the things that I do to just keep my sanity in life. But right now, all my energy, all my intensity is being poured into what I'm trying to do here at GoDaddy, right? And so that has become my new purpose, right? And so I'm trying to create a new security standard for the world, right? I'm trying to take what Google has done with HTTPS everywhere and take it to the next level, kind of help any website on the world think about security in what I believe to be the right way, right? And so that is my drive. That is my focus. That is my purpose right now. And if I can do that, I honestly feel we can change how we can make the internet safer for our kids tomorrow, right? Like, we can keep the internet open. We can solve this problem. And that's become my purpose. And so I just channel all my intensity into that, right? That's what keeps me up at night. That's what keeps me from sleeping. Like, that's, and I love that. I love that kind of conviction on that. Like, I just need that.
You're kind of like the Marines of the internet. you're the dude that's like standing on the wall, like protecting everybody, making sure that like no people don't get hurt.
That's actually interesting, right? Because I've done a lot of jobs, right? When I got out, but the only thing that's ever kept me happy was here at Sucuri. And I think the reason it always kept me happy was because I felt like I was doing something for our customers, right? I was keeping them safe. I was keeping the bad guys out. We were fixing their websites. We were changing their lives. There was no greater experience than I would get on a call well, it's not a great experience, but it's, you get on a call, you know, customer's crying. She just, you know, she maybe has a website that's generating $1,000 a month or something like that. For us, relatively speaking, it was immaterial, but for them, this was their livelihood, right? Maybe somebody had retired. It was extra income. They're on a fixed income and they were kind of making ends meet. They were paying their bill, et cetera. Like, I would hear these stories and I would just feel so connected with them, right? Like, it would hurt me inside. Like, we got to do everything we can to fix this. And then it became every one of our customers was like that. It was like we could live and breathe what that customer was going through. And it would just break our hearts that they were going through it. Like, we felt like nobody should have to go through that. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe there's a level of intensity there. I don't fucking know. But it was just like, you just wanted to like reach through the phone and kind of console them and be like, it's going to be all right. We're going to fix this for you. Right. And that is what really fueled my fire for six and a half years. Right.
I think we're all probably glad you're doing that. You're making the world a better place. How do you feel about people saying thank you for your service?
I hate it.
Why?
I don't know. I feel like people say thank you for your service because they're obligated. They feel obligated to do it, right? If they truly understood what was going through my head at that time, why I did it, stuff like that, they probably wouldn't thank me. Everybody likes to thank because, oh, it's the cool thing to do these days, right? You know, everybody feels patriotic. You know, I thank everybody that didn't come home, right? You know, I thank those folks that really put it all. I just put a little bit out there. You know, some people put it all out there and they'll never have anything. Those are the people I thank. I don't need anybody to say thank you for what I did. I did it because I needed it and I loved it. And if you knew what was going through my head at that time, you probably wouldn't thank me. Like, I was out there and I was like, I'm going to kill every fucking I find, right? And that was okay in my head, right? And people don't want to know that.
Maybe I'll say it differently. Maybe I'll say, I'm glad you came home. I'm glad you came home. And thank you for making the internet a little bit safer.
Yeah. No, but I don't know what it is about that I dislike so much. I feel so uncomfortable when people tell me that. I just like, okay, cool. Thanks.
Well, I don't think it doesn't sound like you did it for the thanks.
Yeah. That's the thing, right? I feel like I could have done so much more. I don't know.
Well, thank you for your time. Thank you for your services and founder of the podcast. Will you take that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am, I will.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.